And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, I want to remind you about something neither one of us witnessed firsthand, but we've both read about. You may remember reading that at the end of World War I, there was a mass movement in Germany to explain to the German people that they didn't lose the war on the battlefield, that in fact they won the war on the battlefield, World War I, but the victory was stolen from them by the international Bolshevik bankers who were Jewish, and that in order to get back the victory that they had actually won on the battlefield, they had to support the Nazis. And that, in fact, was the line that the Nazis used to come to victory.
Right. And that was a product of a couple of things. Number one is most of the battles took place outside of Germany. Germany was not devastated the way it was in World War II. People in Berlin were not, their homes weren't destroyed or anything like that. And number two was the harshness of what the Allies, the Triple Entente, had caused the Germans to agree to after the war, the reparations and what have you. And, of course, that created a great deal of suffering and made them ripe for a fascist authoritarian to come on and who knew how to make bold promises of greatness, of past greatnesses.
Well, basically, the promise was that he's going to undo the wrong that was done to them. They had been screwed unfairly. There was a stab in the back. Exactly the line that the Trump people, Bannon, Trump, the Koch brothers, the Flynns, the Giulianis, the whole gang. It's exactly the same playbook, exactly the same. It's exactly what you're seeing.
Yeah.
And what you also saw in the Weimar Republic, the German Republic after World War I, was that the standard conservatives, the old guard conservatives, and the old guard liberals did nothing to oppose that.
Yeah.
Stop the steal of those days. Nothing. Nothing. And what happened? World War II is what happened.
Yeah. I mean, looking at history, I believe that World War I, which had no real reason to happen, was the event that really created everything that happened since then, for good and for bad. And a lot of it was bad. As I said, the rise of fascism. Now, some of it, it destroyed three or four big empires.
Yeah.
The Ottoman Empire, the Austro-Hungarian Empire, the German Empire, and the Russian Empire.
Right. Empires that deserve to be destroyed.
Yeah, the old world. But it created a great political vacuum. And as you said, then it created the building blocks for what became World War II, which then became
the
major
thing that I'm pointing to is that it's the same playbook that we see being exercised in the United States today by the Trump people. And we have it locally. We got a congressional election coming up. We got a Democratic guy, your friend Matt Cartwright. He's got himself a primary opponent, right?
Yeah.
A Democrat who calls himself a Trump Democrat. Got it?
Well, yeah. Well, he doesn't use the word Trump, but he uses all the Trump memes and themes. Calls Cartwright a Marxist. And again, says that we've forgotten our values and that we should honor the working men and what have you. And of course, Matt Cartwright is one of the great supporters of working people. If you go back to his original campaign. He says, I'm a Democrat from the Democratic wing of the Democratic Party.
Yeah, but you recall that the Nazis called themselves the National Socialist German Workers' Party.
Yeah.
These guys masquerade as friends of the workers in order to mobilize workers to support corporate interests, to support everything that is harmful to workers.
Right. Mm-hmm.
What's better than pretending to be your buddy if you want to betray you? In fact, you can't betray somebody if you don't pretend to be his buddy.
Yeah, and of course, then they get the support of the people who are the biggest betrayers, the industrialists, the newspapers, and what have you. And that's what we, in Germany, the industrialists thought that they could work with Hitler, that they could help control him and get what they wanted. And certainly in the first Trump administration, they got a lot of what they wanted. They got their big tax cuts. They got more
regulation knocked down.
Right. More anti-union policies. Things like that. I mean, there were some things that they didn't like, but they were willing to put up with it because they got bigger things.
Yeah.
And so Matt Cartwright's got a primary opponent, a declared opponent, but he hasn't filed anything yet. And I actually was at a get together with Matt Cartwright over the weekend. And he noted that this guy wanted to run against him 2 years ago and couldn't figure out how to get himself on the ballot. And so he couldn't launch a primary campaign.
But incompetence is not the problem. And it's not and relying on the other guy's incompetence is not the solution.
Sure.
Because, they'll find somebody competent.
Yeah.
There's plenty of competent people who are reactionary.
Right. The Trump administration was filled with incompetent people. But what people are worried about, there was that article by Barton Gellman that appeared in The Atlantic saying that only proved to be a dry run, and that what they've done is, by figuring out what they did wrong, they will gain competence for the next election.
That's right. I mean, Mark Meadows is now being... Well, he won't be questioned because he won't show up, but he was subpoenaed by the January 6th commission. And, of course, one of the big things they want to talk to him about is this 38-page PowerPoint that he received that explained exactly how they could wipe out the results of the election, right?
Yeah.
With resorting to martial law.
Essentially, yeah, declaring a national emergency based on the fact that the big lie – that Trump really won the election despite the way the votes came in, and trying to count, not count the votes against him and count only the votes for him or even more votes for him. And they've been working on this on the local level to replace people like Brad Raffensperger down in Georgia, who was a Republican official, but who said, I was elected to do a job, and I'm doing my job, and I'm not going to be bullied or go down in history as buying into the big lie. The numbers are what the numbers are.
80% of the Republican rank and file believe the big lie, and they're just like the Germans.
Yeah, that's the big problem. That's one of the big problems. Yeah, they have the 80% who believe the big lie, and then the other problem is that you have the substantial number of what I guess you'd call the party elites who have decided that even though they know the big lie is a lie, they're going to exploit that lie for their own purposes and buy into it and give it greater power. All these elected officials of the Republican Party, the Ted Cruz's of the world, the Tom Cotton's of the world, the Ben Sasse's, and the wannabes, not only the extremists in the party, the crazies, the Marjorie Taylor Greens, but those with a little bit more background and substance to it. And so we've got that. And then,
because they realize that they've got a mass movement at their backs, and they know that they are able to do things because of that mass movement, which they couldn't do before they had that mass movement. But the Democrats don't have such a mass movement.
Yeah. Well, the other thing that they have is Fox News on their behalf feeding this, and where most of the people, the masses, get their news from is Fox News. And they're also getting benefit, whether they want to admit it or not, from Putin, Vladimir Putin, and the Russians with the social media putting this stuff out. I don't know if you saw this week, Newsmax has a magazine, and on their cover, it's Vlad the Great. On CNN, I'm sorry, on Fox News, Tucker Carlson said, well, what's so bad about Vladimir Putin wanting Ukraine? You know, it's not like he's attacking Western Europe. I mean, what they're asking for is the Western powers to create another Munich, to essentially sell out the people of Ukraine to an authoritarian, fascist-like dictator. And they have no compunction about this. Laura Ingraham is doing the same thing. You know, as you're saying, history is tending to repeat itself. The playbook has been written, and they're following it. They're following it.
So where's the opposition? And why isn't there an effective opposition? I mean, the fact is most people in the country oppose them.
Yeah.
Because most people in the country, one way or another, know that their living conditions will suffer more, that the racism will increase, that the inequality will increase if these people's programs get enacted. But yeah, they're not united in this. They're not an effective force.
Yeah. You know, the big lie people are energized, and the opposition isn't. I mean, we saw some of the opposition energy, right, if you remember, the day after Trump was inaugurated with the Women's March. And we may be seeing some of that intensity again take place if the Supreme Court overturns Roe v. Wade. They're coming very close to doing that. They wouldn't even set aside the Texas law this
week. They won't overturn it if they're smart. If they're smart, they'll keep it. They'll just make it impossible to enforce.
Yeah, well, that's what they're doing with the Texas law right now, but they may not be that smart. They've got people on the court who have been dedicated to overturning it, Clarence Thomas, Alito, Gorsuch, and they may have the votes to finally say, look, enough dancing around. We don't want you coming back time and time again. We're just going to do this and put it back to the states and let them handle it. And if you're a woman who lives in a state that doesn't want to allow you to have an abortion, too bad. As Amy Coney Barrett says, then give your kid up for adoption, and as if there are no other consequences to carrying a child to term and all the possibilities and the problems that could create. So we've seen that the one area that has seemed to have stood up, at least up to the Supreme Court level, has been the federal courts. Even Trump appointees to the court would not overturn votes, but the Trump votes are trying to get around that by saying, well, that's because there were certifications of the election. We're going to go in and not certify the election. We're going to have people. David Perdue announced this week that he's running against Brian Kemp for governor of Georgia. And he said, had he been the governor in 2020, he would not have certified the vote. And therefore, on January 6th, there would have been no vote for the vice president to affirm or to certify. And we're in really uncharted territory there.
And by the way, in the PowerPoint lecture that Mark Meadows circulated about how to prevent Biden from taking power, it made the point that if the job of the vice president at the certification is merely to open the envelopes and read out what's inside the envelope, then he has discretion to not open the envelope. And then that's what he should do. Don't open the envelope. So there's every kind of way use the letter of the law against the intent of the law. It's always been the case. And these are not dopey people, and they will find legal ways of doing the illegal.
Now, the one thing we don't know is what the January 6th Commission has actually been finding out. We have some hints, but they haven't been in public. We know that they've had, they've taken extensive testimonies, including Mike Pence's chief aide about what's happened. And, at some point, they're indicating they're going to go public. Meanwhile, you have some of the people they've subpoenaed saying that they're going to take the Fifth Amendment. John Eastman, who wrote a memo that was similar to what the PowerPoint projected, Jeffrey Clark, Roger Stone, who was involved in helping plan the rally and was there with the that one group of insurrectionists, and Alex Jones, who was
and
one
Mark
of the
Meadows.
And now Mark Meadows is saying that he's going to take the Fifth Amendment. But they ought to make them come in public and say and take the Fifth Amendment. Mark Meadows might have had more than some of the others, because some of the others, like Alex Jones and Roger Stone, weren't in the government, may not have good claims of executive privilege. As a matter of fact, the executive privilege has probably gone away based on the appeals court. But, Mark Meadows may have waived any privilege anyway by writing his book. Once you say something,
but even if the January 6th Commission exposes everything there is to expose, so what? Then what? They did it anyway. They're doing it anyway. They're taking over the administration of the next elections legally. They're going to be the Trump people are going to be the ones who are going to be counting and certifying the next election. That's what's going on. The Democrats are not opposing it. You know that.
Well, yeah, in certain places, and that's one thing they've the Trump people have also intimidated and driven good public servants out of public service. Right. We've seen people who in Michigan and other places, and we see it on school boards where people are being harassed and really threatened.
Death threats,
and what have you. So,
and they get away with it because they've got a mass movement supporting it.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, their numbers aren't that big, but they're
doesn't matter.
But they're loud. They're loud.
Yeah.
And they get magnified because these things are the type of things that are attractive to the camera and attractive to news rather than what's happening. And we still have and who knows what's going to happen in I think the 2022 election is going to be important, just to see what occurs, whether the Republicans can take back any parts of the legislature. They're counting on some gerrymandering to take over the House. They suffered a setback in North Carolina this week when the court there said, "Wait a minute, your map is something that we're going to have to take a closer look at, because it." Really is highly partisan, and they pushed back the primary there, saying that until we determine whether this is kosher or not kosher, we're not going to let you have a primary for these seats. Pennsylvania is going to come out this week, I believe, with the commission map. The Republicans have already put out their maps, which would again try to take a 9-9 split, and we're not going to have 18 members in the House anymore. We're going to have 17, and make it maybe 11 to 6 or something like that. We're going to see what the other proposals come out with, and then it's going to go to the state Supreme Court, and we'll see what that court does. The other thing is the Senate, which is not a subject to gerrymandering. We had Dr. Oz this week coming out with a lot of campaign ads, essentially mimicking Trump, saying that Washington has failed us, and that's another one of their themes, and that he would be there to restore what the Trumpists want. He's running into some opposition. We both saw a letter to the editor of the Scranton Times from a former Republican official in Wayne County who came out and said...
No, the woman who's currently the head of the Republican Women's Organization.
She's currently, I thought she was former, but calling him a carpetbagger. And so he may not, he's going to have problems in the in getting the nomination, but I happen to think that he's, at this point he might be the favorite just because of name recognition. A lot can go wrong. A lot can go wrong on this. He's taken aim at the press, things like that. We'll just have to see how that
look. How I just want to point out something to you and to everybody else. 80% of the Republicans support the big lie nonsense, the big lie lie.
Right.
Well, 80% of the Republicans, that means people who are Republican. That's 23% of the electorate, 23%. 80% of 23% is 18%. That means 18% of the registered voters support the big lie. That means 82% of the registered voters do not. But the 18% are organized and mobilized.
Right.
And they can dominate the 82%.
Yeah, 18% is a fairly big number. Remember, you mentioned Hitler. He never had a majority.
Never. If you had managed to have a free and fair election in 1938, he'd have probably gotten 90% of the vote.
Yeah, but by that time he had consolidated power. But
exactly.
But 1933, he didn't have the majority, opponents were split.
That's right. And so they had the majority against him. That's true.
Yeah.
But that's it. Organization counts. That's the whole point. 82% that's not organized are weaker than 18% that is organized.
Right. Now, especially one that's an intimidating force that's armed and, like the brown shirts were armed.
Yeah.
Now, I want to get back just briefly to the Oz election because the Democrats have what I think are several strong candidates. I've always said that I thought that John Fetterman, the lieutenant governor, had the inside track, that he was very popular. But his folks did a poll that they showed this week. And I thought it was political malpractice for them to show the poll. It showed Fetterman beating Oz, but only by 2 points, and neither of them had a majority. It was 44-42. I would never have shown that poll.
You're right. That borders on idiocy. It's beyond stupidity.
It puts Oz in an equal footing because you have a plus or minus 4% on the poll.
Yeah. I don't even know what to say about something like that.
Yeah.
The results of the poll is not what's staggering. The imbecility of the publication of the poll is what's staggering. Unless he's saying, look, fellas, rally around. Look what's going on.
Well, if he wanted to do that, he should have polled Connor Lamb against Oz and seen what those numbers
were. Exactly, and publicized that one.
Yeah. Now, we talk about organization. We had some things happening this week. We've had labor strife across this country over the past number of months. And in Buffalo, New York, remember they had nominated a socialist mayoral candidate who wound up losing in the general election. But in Buffalo, the Starbucks workers voted to unionize. That's the first time in America. That's first time in America. The Kellogg's workers rejected a pact again for the second or third time. Kellogg says we're going to hire permanent replacements, trying to put pressure on the union. We'll have to see. And you pointed out to me there have been other strikes. The John Deere strike got settled. The union seemed to make some significant gains in terms of compensation. Of course, it's nowhere near what the CEOs make in these things, but at least they've got a better deal than what they had before. And there are other places. You noted to me before that there was a coal miner strike in Alabama that no one has even talked about. And it's been going on since April.
Since April, that's right.
Which is kind of reminiscent of the coal miner strike in 1903 here in northeastern Pennsylvania. which went on for months and months and months until Teddy Roosevelt set up that commission that helped resolve it. But, you know, we'll have to see.
And
how.
By the way, out in California, the researchers, graduate students, and other faculty members on 10 campuses of the University of California voted to unionize just last week into the United Auto Workers. 10,000 signed cards. 17,000 workers joined the UAW last week in California. That's a biggie.
That's a biggie. Yeah. By the way, I don't know if we didn't note a couple weeks ago that the Biden-controlled NLRB issued an order saying that they invalidated one of the elections down south. I can't remember. Was it a Toyota plant or something?
No, it was the Amazon. It was the Amazon election.
The Amazon election, saying that there was intimidation and illegal company activities and ordered a new election.
Yep. Things could happen, but they don't just happen on their own.
No. And you have to channel the energy when things happen, instead of into a fascistic movement, into an organized labor type of movement.
That's right. That's exactly right. People have to know who are their friends and who are their enemies. They have to be able to make that distinction, and they have to act on that distinction.
And, of course, that's part of fascism, is to always have an enemy that people can relate to, blame it on someone else.
Yeah, but the enemy that the fascists choose is the friend. That's their point.
Your neighbor.
Yeah, the one advancing programs that will help you, the fascists always say that's your enemy. We who stand implacably opposed to what you need, we're really your friends.
Yeah.
You really don't know what you need. You leave it to us. That's the Koch brothers' line, right? You can't allow democracy to exist on a mass basis because the mass of the people don't really know and will never be able to know what is in their best interest. You got to leave it in the hands of the elite. We'll decide for them. That's the line of the Koch brothers.
Yeah, one of the founders said, "I'm an aristocrat. I hate equality."
Yeah.
I'd have to check the exact quote, but it's along those lines. But a lot can happen. You know, this week we found out that Letitia James, who was going to run for governor in New York, decided to stay where she was to keep her pursuit of Donald Trump, and she's issued a subpoena for him. And remember, hers is a civil action, so you can't invoke the Fifth Amendment, for civil things. If you do, it can be held against you. It can't be in a criminal indictment, but it places Trump in a vice, because if he's already said, well, if people invoke the Fifth Amendment, what do they have to hide?
So, right, exactly.
So he's probably going to delay on that.
Well, that's their line: delay everything, run out the clock. That's
until they can take power,
and if they manage to win the House, they'll get rid of the January 6th committee and. That's the end of it.
Yeah.
You can't rely on the politicians. You can't rely on people who are elected. You can't rely on the courts. You've got to have your own mass movement.
Right. You can only rely on
it for this week.
Yep. And this week I'll have an article in about Bill of Rights Day. So we'll see what occurs with that. And
let's hope we still have a Bill of Rights.
Well, we certainly have a Bill of Wrongs going in.
Exactly right.
All right,
we'll talk about this next week. You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place. This program is supported by Argosy Bookshop of New York City, 116 East 59th Street, just down the block from Bloomingdale's. Old and rare books, prints and maps. Members of the International League of Antiquarian Booksellers, founding members of the Antiquarian Booksellers Association of America, members of the Appraisers Association of America, on the web at Argosy Books, ArgosyBooks.com. Check them out for books, autographs, maps, and prints.